Welcome to Everybody Can, a conversation about volunteers and volunteer opportunities in Jefferson and Clallam counties. I'm your host, Missy Nielsen, a career counselor and committed community volunteer. Our show is inspired by the words and spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King, "Everybody can be great because everybody can serve." We bring you information about the people who volunteer, serve on boards, donate, and sometimes just show up to help build what King called a beloved community. And today, we have one of our beloved community members, Chief Brett Black. He comes to us from Piedmont, California, and has spent his career in California, starting in Marin County, also Clovis, Fresno County, and he joins us as our fire chief here in Port Townsend. Welcome back, Chief.
Great to be here. Thank you for the second invitation.
I am so glad you could carve out more time, and it was such a robust conversation. You know, the focus of what we didn't get to attend to was the work that our volunteers do, the firefighters you have, but we were going to dive into a program you wanted to talk about in terms of readiness.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So we are part of a national campaign in the firefighting industry called Ready, Set, Go. And this organization and effort really focuses on preparing you and your family for wildfire, but there's also some other disaster-related resources that I'd like to message your listeners if I could throw out a website.
Oh, please do.
Okay. If everybody was to write down ready.gov, you're going to find a real good resource for everything related to disasters and how you can make a plan as a family and have a well-rounded access to guidance on how to prepare yourself and your family as well, and your neighbors. So whether it's a storm or weather event, a wildfire, earthquake, there's a ton of resources on that.
You know, I think of fire department, I always forget, you guys are all encompassing. You had mentioned in episode one that this region attracted you because there were water rescues. I always think fire, and here we are. You're called to action when we have major disasters, much like the National Guard at times too. This Ready.gov is in partnership with the fire department, or what other areas of information would they be giving us for emergency preparedness, or is it just, you know, would they be also including how to ready your own home for, to be safe for fires, so to speak?
Yeah, so related to the wildfires specifically, you're going to see a bunch of resources for, making you and your home ready and resilient. Creating defensible space and what defensible space means, and we can get into that a little bit if
Please
we have
do.
Time.
Yes.
It doesn't mean clear cutting and, mowing down every bit of vegetation around your home. There are some very clear prescriptive practices that you can find on that website I just gave you. So that's really going to be helpful for people because I do get a lot of questions. My neighbor has these trees or, it's very dense in there. And we are in the Pacific Northwest with different fire conditions, wildfire conditions where I just came from in California, which has much more stringent requirements. Here, we still have recommended guidelines for people to follow, but it's a little different too. You are, it is a moister environment, but we also dry out frequently when we get an offshore flow and the humidities drop below 25%. That would make for the optimum conditions of a wildfire should somebody be careless. So we want to point you to that as well.
Excellent, excellent. You know, I just saw on the news today that a weather forecaster had gone in the field and he had taken a humidity rating. I don't know the term for that tool, but it was in a downed log in one of the big parks in Seattle. And they're measuring the dryness of this wood, which is highly unusual for this time of year. And he was remarking about, our fire risk in Western Washington is beginning. And it's really, we kind of don't think about it in our smaller city environments. So a wildfire we think about, and now we're thinking about emergency preparedness. Talk a little bit about some of the basics of preparedness on or is, do you say that ready.gov is the best place for our folks to go?
Ready.gov is going to have the details, but the general scheme is, you know, be ready with preparing your home and your family. Set, and that means be alert. Make a go kit before you need it. Have a plan. And then go. So the ready, set, and go. And that means act early. Follow your, you know, action plan. And there's guidance for how to make one for you and your family in this website. And then also go early. You know, that means, you know, don't wait if there's a evacuation recommendation. You don't want to be the last person trying to get out of a community, especially if access is limited, because the firefighters are going to be trying to get in and you're trying to get out, which are some of the challenges we face every fire season. People wait too long. So have a backup plan. Go find, you know, have a couple friends that you could stay with that are, you know, close enough to go stay with that wouldn't mind a couple extra people for a night or two. So that's kind of the general scheme. But when you talk about fire weather, which is what we would call fire weather, that is what you were describing from the reporter. Mm. We actually, there's a lot of science that people don't understand that is involved with predicting the outcome for wildfires. You know, we would use that term ERC, or energy release component, that you just described with the amount of water that is in the fuel. And we call logs and wood and grasses fuel. That's our industry vernacular. And we're watching it closely right now. Within the next 7 days, the wildfire potential in our region here is actually going to be above average.
Right.
We have conditions that are alarming, and we are going to be upstaffing over the 4th of July weekend for that risk.
Any suggestions for us to be helpful in terms of, you know, as a citizen with our home, and you know, how we can mitigate some of this unusual weather in terms of, well, you might speak to the 4th of July, but that is that's an annual, we could have a whole show on what we might do there. But in your home environment and readiness to reduce fire risk in the summertime?
Yeah, it's very dynamic. So that's why we're kind of pointing people to these resources, because it's hard to just come up with a bullet. But the general theme that I could point your listeners to is have a plan be prepared. You know, follow the guidance that's on the website that we just listed. And there's also resources on our fire department website, which is ejfr.org, on how to prepare for a wildfire around your home, creating defensible space, using some great graphics as well. And those are kind of the low-hanging fruit for, you know, we want everybody to be kind of personally accountable to making your home defendable. We don't have the resources to make every condition safe, and that includes fire and wildfire. We only, like I spoke in the earlier episode, we only have about 10 to a dozen firefighters on at a time, and we will be able to get help from other agencies, but that takes a long time. So the initial crews are going to be quickly overwhelmed, and if you haven't done anything to prepare your home, it's not going to be defendable for us.
Right.
And we're going to have to try to use the minimum resources that we have to make the biggest impact.
It almost seems that you have as many volunteers in your world as you do professionals. When we come back from our station ID, could we talk a little bit about the categories of the folks that are on the fire department and some of the roles that volunteers can do to help you?
That would be great.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Missy Nielsen of Everybody Can, and we have Chief Brett Black from the East Jefferson Fire Rescue District 1 with us today. And this is one of two parts, and you can join us on the web and get caught up at kptz.org. So, Chief, back to the conversation of the community and readiness and our part as volunteers. How can we be a part of that? And what are the folks doing in your department right now? What volunteers do you have currently?
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. As we spoke before the break, we don't have enough resources, as in boots on the ground, to mitigate every emergency. So we rely heavily on our volunteers in this organization. In fact, over 80% of our career people started as volunteer firefighters, including myself. So volunteers are in our blood, if you, so to speak, kind of think of it that way. So we have a very robust volunteer program with several subcategories. So you don't necessarily have to be a in-the-field firefighter to be a big help to your community. We can find a place for almost everybody. We have EMS-only volunteers that just want to help with medical emergencies. In fact, they've helped us on a couple major incidents in the past couple weeks, and with the fire that we had in Port Hadlock and others. And they are the ones that are transporting the community members with injuries to the local medical facilities. And they still get trained and in EMS, or emergency medical services, as EMTs. But they're a vital part of our program. We also have wildfire-trained firefighters that are volunteers, and they augment our wildfire response. And they're also capable of helping other agencies. We send engines all over the West Coast, including California. We've sent people as far south as Malibu to the Woolsey Fire, which is a very infamous and devastating fire. Mm. And our wildfire firefighters, that's a mouthful, help throughout the region, and they're also well-trained. And then we have our full combat firefighter, volunteer firefighter, that is trained to do everything I just mentioned and enter a fully involved structure fire with our career people. That takes an extensive amount of training, though.
Yeah.
Just firefighting element, like I spoke to in episode one, is 250 hours or more just to get qualified for the initial training. So it's a lot of commitment for a volunteer. And typically the people that apply for that program are trying to become career firefighters. So they're usually only with us. It's almost like an apprenticeship program.
I think it's wonderful that you have a pathway for volunteerism. 80% go on to be, you know, career pathways. That speaks well. If someone heard that and said, I am interested in this, where would they go? Is it the local website, or would they go to a national Seattle for the fire information about the training and getting in the queue?
Yeah, it really depends on what they're trying to get out of it. And that is, we have resources on our website at ejfr.org. But there are also other national volunteer programs if they don't necessarily live in our district or want to do something a little different. So we can also find resources just researching, you know, emergency volunteer, disaster volunteer. FEMA has a volunteer cadre as well.
Okay.
And you get trained for that. But there's a lot of opportunities. And the one other category that I missed, a volunteer, I'm sorry to jump in real quick.
Oh, that's okay.
Is our support volunteers. Our support volunteers are the unsung heroes. They are the ones that are helping us maintain a lot of our equipment. Our support volunteers augment our 911 response with bringing extra specialized vehicles to the emergency scene for prolonged operations, such as we have a light and air unit, which refills the air bottles that we breathe. And those we have a very good cadre of volunteers for that role that live in Call Point and Cape George.
Okay, who knew? Who knew that you had a volunteer group recharges or refills your water bottles?
Air bottles,
excuse me. Okay.
When we go into a fire, we have to breathe with a mask.
Got it. But that's so cool that you have things, a wide range of support volunteer that doesn't take the intensive time of, as you said, like the combat firefighter. And so the information there for folks, how would they find you?
All of it's on our website. On the front page of our website, I'm looking at it right now. You can find everything related to volunteers in a description of what each of them, the expectations are for each of them as well.
Excellent.
We're always recruiting volunteers. We have more volunteers than career staff. We have over 40 volunteers and only about 35 staff, like I spoke earlier. So it's they're a vital part of our organization.
And are you currently recruiting right now for any particular roles, either the combat or the support side?
We are always recruiting for volunteers, for anybody that may have a need to or desire to serve their community. So if we don't actually have a class that is scheduled to start for a volunteer program of one of those categories I spoke of.
Okay.
We'll take their name and contact information, and we have an active list. So we put on 3 or 4 volunteer academies per year for the different specialties.
Oh, that's good to know. And that'll also be on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. You know, what are some of the misconceptions about either the volunteerism or the services that you bring to our community? Anything come to mind about?
I think the one that I hear the most is that a lot of people, even family members of mine, are still kind of puzzled when I remind them that what a pronounced emergency medical mission that we have. We are the ones that come to your home with our well-qualified firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics when you call 911 and you have a loved one that's having a medical emergency. And it's not even in the name of a firefighter, right?
Right.
So it's not obvious, but that is our primary function. It's over 70% of our calls.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and we have some pretty amazing statistics that you mentioned earlier about, you know, our patient, what we would call patient outcomes for East Jefferson. The state's, Washington State's percentage of bystander CPR, for example, just a civilian walking by and helping with CPR, is 59%. Most of those people, you know, get CPR training through their, you know, in their local community. In Jefferson County, the rate is 76% will stop and help somebody having a medical emergency. The success rate for surviving a cardiac event, what we would call return of spontaneous circulation, for Washington State is about 39%. And in East Jefferson and Jefferson County at large, it's 63% success rate of return from spontaneous combustion. That doesn't mean that you are guaranteed to survive. That just means you have a chance of making it to the hospital for further interventions. Easy for me to say.
Well, we are so fortunate to have your eyes on this community, and I look forward to speaking with you further about volunteers and volunteer opportunities that are coming up. And it sounds like we really need to come alongside to be ready. We need to be part of that equation. And Chief, I really appreciate you joining us for another episode. Do stay in touch when you've got other important information to share with us, whether it's about readiness or connecting with our community as a volunteer. I thank you again for your time.
Thank you for your time.
If you missed part of this program or want to connect with episode 1 on our 2-part, you can join us on the web at kptc.org. Now remember, go out, get involved, and maybe take a look around. Be aware of what your environment is like and how ready you are for anything that might come your way.